Hey, I'm Ryan Phelan, and you're listening to the Epic Phelan Podcast. Today, I talked with investment advisor Todd Schmeckel about balancing risk with growth, the importance of diversification, and how to make investments that let you sleep at night. Welcome to another episode of Epic Phelan, and today we have with us Todd Schmeckel. Welcome, Todd.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, Todd, what we do in Epic Phelan is we bring in people from all sorts of different walks of life, all Calgarians, talk to them about the different things they like about the city, the different things that they do for work and for their career, and we do that over a game of Jenga.
Cool.
Right on. Just sort of makes it interesting and gives a little bit more of a dynamic to the interview.
What happens if I lose?
What happens if you lose? You forfeit your soul to Epic Phelan.
All right. Well, I better win then.
Okay.
Not much soul left.
I know. Well, I was like, what am I lacking on? Okay. So anyway, first of all, tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, what do you do?
So a little bit about me. I used to be a teacher a long time ago. I worked in school divisions. I ran some school divisions. I was a principal, but in the last 5 years or so, a bit more, I've been a financial planner.
Wow. Okay. So financial planning. Tell me a little bit more about that.
The way I think of it is that everybody's got some goals and everybody wants to get somewhere. So you start thinking about where you want to get. Talk a little bit about where you are today. Then where you want to get to. Talk a little bit about how you could get there using whatever resources you are currently using. You talk a little bit about how we might rejig those resources, things we might do differently, what other types of investments we might use, and then about how we would work together to make sure you stay on track for the rest of your life, but make sure that you reach your goals. They're your goals, they're not mine.
Okay. So what would be a good age to really just start thinking about investing? I know a lot of people I know probably don't do a whole lot of investing themselves, but what would be a good age to start thinking about this?
I think any age is a good age. Really, people always ask me, when should I start investing? You start investing when you have the money.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have a whole bunch of money. Everybody thinks, I need $500,000 to start investing. I work with people who are saving as little as $25 a month, up to people who are saving millions of dollars. It really just has to do with you and where you are. The younger you start, the better. And the way I work, my practice is there's lots of education involved, so you don't have to come to the table knowing a whole bunch. And I think that's the fear for most people, is they're worried, I don't know enough. Just come. I do a lot of educational seminars. Just having a conversation is always easy and always free.
Oh, nice. Like, what would the difference be between going to you and going to an investment person, say, at your bank?
So I think the difference between myself and a person at the bank is generally, you can probably tell from my voice, I'm old. They're young. So generally speaking, the people are quite young. They're just really new to the field. They have a different certification than I would have. They have MDFA certification, which means that they're certified to sell mutual funds, essentially. I have IROC certification and insurance certification, so much higher level of certification. Additionally, I don't have any product to sell. It's a plan-based. And so I don't really care what people buy, provided it fits some criteria. It fits their plan. It's what a reasonable or rational person would do. It's potentially going to make money, and it's going to help them reach their goals. Whereas if you worked at a particular bank, let's just call it the Green Bank, you got to buy the Green Bank's product. If you go to Ford, you're going to buy a Ford truck. You're not going to buy a Chevy there. And so that's a big difference. There's no shareholder involved in my business, so I don't have to kick money upstairs to anybody. My plans work around the people I work with. I think those are probably the two big differences. Additionally, there is just so much more product or so much more possibilities in the financial planning world that are available to people than just one line or one company's goods. So I work with tons of companies, thousands of them.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to invest like in stocks in just like one company, could they come see you for that as well?
Yeah, they can see me for that. I do some of that, but generally speaking, we try to build balanced and portfolios that keep as much eye on the downside about losing money as we do about making money, making sure that people are, think about a teeter-totter. When you were a kid, you rode a teeter-totter, one kid gets on the end, he's bigger than the other one. If you go up in the air, your portfolio is out of balance. We want to keep you in balance according to who you are and the types of investments that work for you. Stock is certainly a part of that. I work with lots of people who are stock buyers.
Okay. All right, so let's get started with this Jenga here. Do you want to go first or do you want to go second?
I'll go second. I'm looking forward to this.
Okay.
I'm kind of hoping it falls right now.
Do you know what? It just might.
I don't think I've ever played this before. Well, not when I'm not camping anyways.
Alrighty, there we go.
All right.
So, being in real estate, of course, my choice investment is in real estate. What are your thoughts on people that say, like, oh, you don't want to invest in real estate, you want to have more paper assets?
I find that lots of times investors fall into two categories. They fall into the category, I love the market and I hate real estate, or I hate real estate and I love the market. I think people need both. I obviously like the market, but I'm also a real estate investor. I think what we're trying to create is as much diversification for people as we can. And real estate is certainly an asset class that's important, particularly in Canada. And when we look at long history, real estate has done well.
Yeah, absolutely. Real estate, of course, being a much longer play, like, is what it should be. We've been spoiled here in Calgary, and we've had the one big boom, and then we had a couple little booms after that, and now we're in a bit of a recession here. But if you look at it as a longer play, it should be, it's always a good investment.
Yeah, I would agree, especially an income property. You know, I think that where people get confused on these things is we get our sort of wrapped around our head, what's a tangible asset and what's an intangible asset? You can touch a house, you can touch a mall or a piece of property. Pretty hard to touch a stock, but a stock is the same thing as real estate. It's a piece of ownership. You just own a piece of a company. It's just a different way of owning things. And that's why I think we want a lot of diversification in terms of what we do. There's other ways to own real estate as well. You can own a REIT, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Investing in different stocks and investing in different companies and others. There can be some fun with it where it's like, oh, I own some Pepsi, or I own some of Disney stocks. I know Disney used to do up a nice little, you know, thing if you bought some Disney stock and they would send it to you. But what are your thoughts on the bigger companies and getting into those?
Those are the companies I like the best. I like companies that are profitable. Startups, there's lots of opportunity for the startup to go out of business. So I like big companies that are profitable, have a stable board, have a stable product. The product has a moat around it. Nobody's making any more Coke. Obviously, Pepsi's the main competitor. Those have been around for 100 years. You're not seeing a lot more Coke or Pepsi come out, that sort of thing. Disney's a great example. Pretty hard to compete with Disney in the theme park area now, that sort of thing. So I like big, solid companies, blue chips kind of companies. And then I like some growth stocks, too, to augment those type of portfolios. And those kind of things can be anything. A lot of tech right now has been a big growth kind of thing. But I'm always watching, and we're always analyzing and always sort of reviewing what's happening in the market.
That's a really big trend that you're seeing now.
Really big trend right now is going to cash. A lot of people are going fully to cash, which is a bad trend.
What do you mean by that?
So people are selling completely out of all of their positions. They think there's a big recession coming. They're hearing things in the media, so they think that they'll just get completely out of the market and they'll just buy back in after the recession.
When everything goes up.
That's right, yeah.
Right, so I noticed that in real estate too. When everything's on sale or when you're in a bit of a downturn, people are starting to sell off. Once there's any kind of boom or whatnot, that's when people are jumping in. So it's always buy low, sell high, but people are always do the opposite.
Yeah, you're bang on. We're conditioned to do the opposite. When everybody is excited about something, that's when we get excited. And usually by the time we get excited, it's too late. And we also know, statistically speaking, that there are only so many good days in the market. And what you're hoping to do by taking all your money to cash is to be able to time the market. And we know that no one can time the market. You look at the greatest investors in history, they are never out of the market. Once you're in the market, you should be in and paying attention to what's going on, doing your homework. Sometimes you'll go to more cash to buy things on the dip, but getting completely out is a timing issue. And everyone thinks they can do it, but no one's been able to consistently do it. And we sort of start fooling ourselves. We think we're smarter than everybody else. The reality is we're not. We need to be good quality companies and stick with them.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm thinking of like the different demographics of buyers here. The one that I'm seeing because of the baby boomers growing up and, you know, becoming empty nesters, and, you know, the 2.5 kids are leaving the house, yeah, and they're moving down to maybe a condo and then maybe buying an investment property or a property in the States or, you know, somewhere overseas. Is there some good strategies there that somebody can do where they can take some of their equity from their home and then also like split it between doing a property for themselves, like a smaller property, and then and throw some of that into investing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people going to, I think they're called zero payment mortgages or 0% mortgages, where they're essentially not paying down their principal, and they take out some of their equity. So let's say they've got a $400,000 property, they're taking out $100,000, they're buying that vacation home like you talked about, the cottage, that sort of thing, and they're taking another $100,000 and diversifying into the market. And they're usually those are people who are buying dividend producing stocks. They're looking for an income stream, right? And so they're trying to free up equity they have in homes to create an income stream. So the home itself is an income stream, then they create an income stream for dividend stocks, and they also get a great place to go on vacation with the family.
Okay. What would be some of the potential pitfalls with that? Or would should somebody, like, when you're talking to them, how do you safeguard them?
Well, I think it's all about risk and what people are comfortable with. And regardless of what type of investment you're using, real estate or stock or mutual funds or whatever, you've got to be inside your risk tolerance. If you can't sleep at night, the investment isn't the right investment for you. So that's the first and foremost, is making sure you stay inside your risk tolerance. Other things is making sure that people invest in good quality companies or in your business when they're buying a house. They buy the house in the, what do you say, location, location, location. They buy their investment property in the right location, that sort of thing. And so I think that those are two really big ideas. But I think a third big idea is to make sure that the person has an end in mind. We're not just investing for the sake of investing. What are we trying to get out of this? What are we trying to get our money to do for us? If it's provide a roof over our head and feed our children and that sort of thing, that's totally different than investing in terms of a speculative way. If you can't afford to lose the money, don't speculate. If you're investing to create a future, that's different.
Yeah, and there's some safer ways to do that.
For sure.
Okay, so let's hit up some Jenga here.
Sure.
I am having no luck.
I think you've played this a lot.
There we go. All right, Todd.
There we go.
We got some competition here. So we talked about some empty nesters. What about first-time homebuyers? Now, like first-time homebuyers, they're not going to have a whole lot of cash on hand to be able to be putting in as a down payment and as to enter into the investment market. So what would you suggest there?
There's millions and millions of dollars. I think the biggest wealth transference in history is actually occurring right now. And I think in Canada, it's $9 trillion over the next 20 years passing from baby boomers to their children. I often say to parents, why are you waiting to give this to your kids? Give them some now. So that helps them buy a house. Additionally, what I often say to younger people is put some money in RSP. You can use that home buyer plan at $35,000. Get your tax reduction. Use that money from your tax refund to pay your lawyer, your home inspector, that sort of thing. Use the $35,000 as your down payment. You get two young people like that, there's $70,000. I don't know the prices of properties. You know better than I, but that seems like a pretty good down payment to me.
Yep.
Especially if mom and dad give them the money and mom and dad gift them the money. There's no payment back there. They can still put that money in the RSP and get the tax deduction.
Absolutely, and that's something that I actually seen here is a bit of a trend where they're going to be purchasing a home as a rental property for their kids as they're going to university.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Right, and then that way they can be out of the home and they can do the whole university thing and become an adult. And by the time they're done their university training, there's a home with some equity in it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And if the home belongs to the kid, there's way less issue there. It can be their house and, you know, there's no capital gains tax then if it's their principal residence, that sort of thing too. I think that's a great way to help a kid start out.
Well, right on. So a question that I ask everybody when they come in, and something that is an inevitable question when you first meet somebody, is so you're living in Calgary. Where are you from?
I'm from Toronto originally, but I've been west for so long that I don't feel like an easterner. I feel like a westerner. I don't know my way around Toronto, but I know my way around to Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver.
Yeah. Who do you cheer for?
In which sport?
Hockey?
Flames, of course.
Oh, there you go.
Flames, of course.
It's like trying to set you up here.
They're going to get me beat up in here.
Exactly. Right on. Being a true Calgarian, then we've tested your Calgarianism, I guess. What are some of your favorite things to do in Calgary when you're not focusing on investing? What are you interested in?
My favorite thing in the winter is to get skiing with the kids, get out to the mountains in the summer, camp. Got a couple dogs, like going out hiking with the dogs, that sort of thing. Also really like the Calgary sort of food scene. Like, I like to get in on 17th, and I got a number of clients that are restaurant owners, and I like to get out to their restaurants, that sort of thing. I just think Calgary is a great place. I think Eastern Canadians often think there's nothing going on here, but this is a pretty vibrant place, and there's a lot of really great things. And I have friends who come and visit me, and they're surprised at how much is going on here. And nightlife here is actually really quite good. The other thing I like about here is things like the Blues Can, and all the craft beer scene here has just exploded.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. It's awesome.
And I love craft beer, so.
How nice. What kind of beer drinker are you? Are you like a stout or a...
That's it. I'm a dark beer guy. In fact, this place here used to have a stout with, jalapenos in it, and it was the best.
Oh, wow.
And they haven't had it again. I'm hoping they'll have it again this fall.
Just a quick shout out to Wild Rose Brewery. That's where we're doing the interview today. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, this is a great place. Not too far from my office. Come here for lunch, meet other people here sometimes.
It's definitely a great place, and being in the barracks, right? So that's something very interesting.
Yeah.
You got the food scene, and you said skiing, snowboarding. Have you ever tried that one out?
Yeah, I tried it out, but I'm no good at it. I spent the whole time on my knees facing the snow. I grew up a skier, and I'm too old to switch, I guess. Uh-huh. It looks fun, but I'm just not any good at it.
Yeah, I think I have to try snowboarding, because every time I'm an epic Phelan when it comes to skiing, that's for sure. Balin Phelan, I guess, is what they would call me. So I'm just no good. They say, try snowboarding, it'll be so much better. I'm like, I don't know.
That looks tough to me, and especially the steeper it gets, it just looks like a runaway skateboard to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to Jenga, let's hit up a Jenga piece here.
The whole thing's twisted a bit now.
Oh, I know. There we go.
You got the hands of a surgeon.
Maybe a career I should look at. No, absolutely not.
I'm not taking that one out. This one looks very dangerous.
So you also mentioned food. Okay, best wings in the city.
Best hot wings. My favorite hot wings are at Earl's, but that's probably not fair, because when I was in university, there was an Earl's right across from where I lived, and we went there every Wednesday for hot wings, so that's probably not fair.
So it's probably turned into comfort food kind of thing.
It has, for sure. I also sometimes, like during hockey games, I go to that Buffalo Bill Wild Wing. They got so many different flavors, and just keep trying them.
Yeah. So wings, and any other kind of like food venues that you like to hit up?
Yeah, I really like Cleaver on 17th there. They got the coolest Caesar there. It's got a big turkey wing in it and stuff like that. I like that. I like Gringo Street. There's a taco place right next door to it. It's really good there, too.
That's awesome. So you do know your food.
Yeah, but I actually know the owner there. Her name's Barbara Spain, and the food there is just great.
So, investment guy, would you invest in a restaurant?
Yeah, for sure I'd invest in a restaurant. Yeah, but just like anything else, quality, right? You know, I wouldn't invest in, you're going to have to put in the hard work, right? You know, it's the same thing with do-it-yourself investors. They're just spitballing and just picking a stock they heard at the table next door to them out at a restaurant. That's probably not going to work. Probably not going to work, you know, just cooking hot dogs from Costco. That's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
But I think these the places, particularly in the inner part of Calgary there, I don't know what subdivisions are or whatever, you know, along the Beltline and 17, that those places are they've thought out their menus, and you know, I would invest in something like that for sure.
Absolutely. So taking the leap into investment, what made you do that?
Well, it really wasn't a leap. It really seems like a leap to a lot of people, but it wasn't. I grew up in an investment family. My mom was an investment banker. I was an investor my entire life. I was a really active investor. I spent tons of time sort of reading, and I got the qualifications to do the job I'm now before I ever did the job I'm doing now. Additionally, it was sort of a passion for me. So when I retired from left teaching, I actually day traded for a couple of years with some friends. I learned a lot there too. And then when I joined the firm I'm with now, I learned so much more there about what I was doing wrong and what I could correct and how I could fine-tune things and how I could make a plan work, that it's really not been a leap. It's been more of a growth over my whole life.
Okay. So you actually kind of mentioned something there that reminds me that being the name of the show, Epic Phelan,
yeah.
One of the questions that I like to ask people is like, what is something that you would see as like an epic fail, or maybe something you've done or something that you would do over again if you had the opportunity, given different insights, you know?
Yeah, so the first thing I would do differently for sure is that when I started off, I thought I was going to be this Wolf of Wall Street picking all these stocks kind of person.
Yeah.
Not when I started my job, but when I started my financial practice, but when I started just investing. So when I was, my very first investment was actually 18 with money. Before that, I was constantly investing as a kid in these, like, the Globe and Mail stock challenge and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But at 18, I actually I got some money from a summer job, and I decided I was going to invest. So I put it into Sears. Why Sears? I don't know. I have no idea. There was a Sears in the mall near me, and I guess I shopped there, so I guess that's why. It turned out to be a total disaster. So my next investment was this company that builds bus engines, and they were right at the cutting edge of sort of alternative powered vehicles. And I had read about them in a magazine, and it all sounded really good. So I put a couple $1,000 when I was 19 into that, and it went to zero.
Oh.
So what I sort of learned there was do your research, get some advice, sort of, and don't listen to tips. And so the second investment, I read the articles, but I also got a tip on it. And tips are just what they are, tips. They're not necessarily investments.
So nice.
Those have been two fails for me. This whole idea, I was trying to time the market when I was young too.
Yeah.
And we talked about that already. It just never worked. And we know now that the research shows us that people make money by 90%, 98% of their money by asset allocation and rebalancing. So that's sort of where I've gone myself.
Yeah, okay. It's funny that you mentioned the tips. You always hear this, like, the hot tip, you know, in the movies, right? They got a hot tip on this.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But that's usually never a good thing.
No, I remember that a friend of mine, he's an accountant, and I lived in the small town in Saskatchewan when I was teaching, and there was this little micro mining company in BC somewhere. Don't even remember its name, but I played hockey with all these guys, and there was 30 of us in this dressing room, and this guy said, hey, I got this tip. He was an accountant. He got this tip from a client, and so we all bought it the next day, and 3 weeks later, we each had about $20 left.
Oh,
it just went terrible.
Yeah,
that was it. After that, I never did another tip after that.
Nope. So on the flip side of that, what is something that you're really, really proud of, or really like something you would even like pass on to somebody to say, this is maybe a process that you should use?
The thing I'm sort of proud most about is working out a plan, setting that plan, and sticking to the plan, and saving month after month after month. So for myself, I save 10 to 20% every month of what I make, and I invest that right away. I'm not looking for the best deal. I'm looking for the best quality investment for me that fits into the categories I'm using. So there are about 10 major parts of the stock market or the economy. I'm looking to make sure I'm balanced in all of those parts, and I'm using an investment philosophy that really works well in terms of buying growth dividend stocks. I'm looking, even when the market's not improving, I'm looking to collect an income from these stocks.
So when you say a growth dividend stock, maybe expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, so a dividend stock is a company. There are basically only three types of investments in Canada. There's income investments. Those are investments that are paying you an income. When you're young, you don't want an additional income because that just creates additional tax. Then there's growth stocks, and those growth stocks are, you pay $10 for it, it goes to $20, you sell it, you make $10, that kind of thing. The vast majority of them fit in the middle, and there's a combination between income and growth. So that's a company like TELUS, for example. It spins off a dividend every year of a couple of dollars per share every year, but it also, the company grows, so the share price could grow from $40 to $50. That's the area where most of my investing personally goes, and a good part of my clients go to. But as people age, we're of course more interested in income. So at 65, we don't have chance. We don't want to take chances. And what we need is an income. You know, we get our CPP and our OAS pension if you got one. Not very many people have those anymore. And so we need something to provide money. So as we go over time, we shift more and more to income producing things. Things like Fortis. Fortis' stock isn't going to grow a ton, but they're going to spin off money forever.
Oh, okay. All right. So here we go. We're going to hit up some more Jenga here. Well, that was pretty smooth. That was pretty smooth. Oh, look at that.
That one just fell out.
Yeah, that one just fell out. There you go.
Now you've made it way hard.
Oh. Alrighty, Todd. Here we go.
I think you've played this a bit.
It's,
Oh, no.
It's a bit tricky. what's a good rate of return on an investment?
It really depends on what your risk tolerance is and what you're trying to do. And so, you know, I often have people say to me, well, you know, my buddy's getting 12%. Well, if your goal is to, let's say, retire and you only need 6%, why would we take 12% risk? We're not trying to lose money. We're trying to make money over a long period of time. I don't think there's another Jenga piece here I can take out. So a good return has a lot to do with the type of portfolio we're in. So a balanced portfolio, the return there is going to be completely different than the return in a growth portfolio. And those are portfolios you'd use at different times in your life. A conservative portfolio is obviously going to have a way different return than a growth portfolio. The more risk you take, the more growth you're going to get. But it doesn't go on forever. People seem to think that. At a certain point in time, risk exceeds growth. And so we want to make sure that we take enough risk just to get you a little bit more than what you need. Oh, I don't know if I can get this piece out. Just a little bit more than you need to get you comfortable and reach your goal.
Well, speaking of goals, let's see.
Oh, I can't believe that didn't fall.
That's, I think you have the hands like a surgeon, my friend. Would you say is one of the best returns, like one of your best investments that you've ever seen?
A good one a couple of years ago was in Canada. You know, people were buying it in the low fives and it shot up to $19 and you're getting 160-170% return. But what I find with those investments is those aren't the type of investments you're building your life on. Those are sort of once in a while kind of things. You can make money when the market goes up, we call that a bull market. You can make money when the market goes down, we call that I thought that was falling. We call that a bear market. But what I find is pigs get slaughtered. If you get way too greedy, you're going to lose money sooner or later. So I like to take profit when profit makes sense.
Bitcoin.
Not investment, speculation.
All speculation?
Yeah, all speculation. Obviously, people can make money in speculating. You are good at this game. Like, people can make money speculating, and I'm not against speculation at all. I'm against speculating away your net worth or speculating away to damage your net worth or to screw up your life. Like, oops. Oh, I almost knocked that over, didn't I? Like, I'm against speculating when it's going to destroy your relationship or your, that's not going to work. That sort of thing. But I think everyone should speculate a little bit. I think that keeps things interesting, but you shouldn't speculate so much that you're not speculating more, that you're gambling. I can't believe this thing is still standing.
I can't believe it either, actually. Where?
It looks like a fish's skeleton now.
If I get this one out, I think this is...
If that comes out, this is it.
If there was a professional Jenga championship, I think we would be like the league professionals. Okay, I know that this is going to be it. Like, there's no way that I'm going to have this. Yeah, we're done.
Oh, it fell.
Oh, so close. I thought you had that one. Okay. So any last thing that you would like to plug? Like, if somebody had questions or wanted to talk to a professional about investing, who do they phone?
Well, they can call me. You know, I do tons of consultations. A lot of times people are doing everything right? The consultation is just to check on seeing you're doing right. It's not always about doing business together. Sometimes it's just a second check. I do lots of second checks for people. You know, there's no point changing if you're doing things well. They can call me at 403-238-2003, or they can email me too at todd@todd.schmekel.com. So that's todd@todd.schmekel.com. More than willing to help. You can just ask any questions they want. Do lots of free consultations.
Oh, right on. Well, yeah, that's definitely helpful to do the free consultations, because yeah, it's just a checkup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, right on. Well, thank you very much for coming in, and thank you for indulging me in the Jenga. And
thanks for whooping me.
Yeah, and we'll have to have you back sometime.
That sounds great. Great to see you, man.
Okay, right on.
Take care. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to Epic Failin'. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and give me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at RealRyanFailin, and visit my website at thecalgaryrealestateguy.com. Until next time, stay epic.